You know, grief is a strange mess indeed. Just the whole thought of grieving and what happens when we grieve, it's a strange thing. You heard me. You heard me read 15a. We have 16 candles lit here today. Representing 15 persons from our church family who in the last year have died. That's hard for a church. That's hard for a church to keep going through that over and over and over again. It's hard for a church to get to the other side of that when it just is recurring and so many. I said in the first service today, I've been doing ministry for 40 years. And I can't remember a year in ministry, in a church, where I've read 15 names. I can't. And then I said family and friends, and so many people stood up because grief affects us all in some way, shape, or form. Grief is a hard thing. Grief is it's a tough thing to move our way and navigate our way through. Maybe you've seen a chart that looks something like this. Maybe you've been to someone who talked to someone and said, "Oh, there are stages of grief." And what you do is as you're grieving, you move your way around this. Oh, it doesn't even show up. Darn. I love this little pointer thing. But you move yourself around the continuum when you're grieving. That some way you start with shock and you go all the way through all that stuff, and you get down there at the bottom and it's disorganization, loneliness and depression and reentry problems and all that kind of stuff. And what happens is, in reality, it's not as easy to walk around that continuum as it looks. I'll be honest with you, for me, many times in this year and many times in my life in the past, grief has, and my process to get through grief has looked much more like this. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. Where, it's like you take two steps forward and then suddenly you're three steps backwards. You take another two steps forward and then suddenly you're five steps backwards. Grief is hard. Grief is something that's, you're all over the place. No particular order, no reason or rhyme, and seemingly confused in how really you get through it to get to the other side of it. I don't mean to belabor this point about grief, but it's a good thing for us to talk about on All Saints Sunday. And to be really honest with you, after this last round of funerals that Mel and I did, and then right on the heels of that was the death of Diana's brother, I was reeling a little bit, I'll be honest with you. I was in this little bit of a funky place. I couldn't really figure things out. And I was asking God, God, what in the world is going on here? 15 in one year. That doesn't include family and friends. Then we lost, Dinah's brother died. And I'm like, God, what? And I'm concerned about myself at that point, thinking, okay, can I get through this? And then I got thinking about the church and thinking to myself, can we get through this? How do we get through? How do we navigate our way through this grief thing? That is, if we can say we don't grieve, but we're kidding ourselves. We're grieving. How do you get to the other side of that? How do you get past that? I wondered what it might be like. You know, I said, okay, God, what's it going to take to help me, to help us, to put one foot in front of the other, one day at a time, to be restored and renewed? What's it going to take? There are a lot of people. There are a lot of people in the Bible that grieved like we are, like we do. They either have experienced some kind of tremendous loss in their lives, or they have been in a place where they have sinned and broken relationship with God, and their lives, their hearts are broken. Some of them grieved deeply. Some of them wondered if there could be even a way to live into the future. Some of them wanted to have some kind of assurance that tomorrow would be better than today. So I want us to take a look at a couple of people in the scriptures that dealt with grief in a very real way. Grab your Bibles, grab your bulletin, grab your smartphone, if that works better. And we're going to turn first of all to Psalm 23. Psalm 23, I have probably read, or at some point in every funeral service I've ever done, this psalm. Tremendous words of comfort. Tremendous words of peace and satisfaction. But listen again to these words. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. I like those words. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. It means, and in other translations it says, I lack nothing. The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. If you've got a pencil or a pen and you want to underline something, underline those words. He restores my soul. That word restores also, is in other translations, says refreshes or renews. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You have anointed my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and loving kindness, or in other translations it says mercy, unfailing love, will follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Those are powerful words. Words of great comfort. Words of great peace. For God's people, for those who understand them and can live into them. And then that passage out of Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 40, beginning at verse 25. Listen to this. To whom will you compare me? This is God speaking. To whom will you compare me? Who is my equal? Asks the Holy One. Look up into the heavens. Who created the stars? He brings them out like an army, one after another, calling each by its name. Because of his great power and incomparable strength, not a single one is missing. Oh, Jacob, how can you say the Lord does not see your troubles? Oh, Israel, how can you say God ignores your rights? Have you not heard? Have you never understood? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of all the earth. He never grows weak or weary. No one can measure the depths of his understanding. He gives power to the weak and strength to the powerless. Even youths will become weak and tired, and young men will fall in exhaustion. But those who trust in the Lord, or wait upon the Lord, or hope in the Lord, those who trust in the Lord will find new strength. Their strength will be renewed. They will gain new strength. They will find new strength. They will soar high on wings like eagles. They will run and they will not grow weary. They will walk and they will not faint. Again, incredible words for you and for me, especially on this All Saints Sunday. The first passage there, Psalm 23, was written by David. And what we don't know, what really nobody knows, is what was the impetus? What was the reason? Why did David write these words? What was the cause of this? What was David going through that he could write such incredible words of comfort and peace to God's people? What's going on here? It seems, logic says that these words must have come from someplace later in David's life. More of a reaction to life, what was thrown at him and kind of what he had learned throughout his life. And the kind of words of self-reminder to David that God was in control. God was in control back in the day, God was in control at the moment, and God will be in control into the future. Guarding and guiding as only He could. What we do know about King David is that there were several incidents that maybe were the background to this psalm. We know the story of David and Bathsheba. And that illicit affair that began that relationship, and following because of David's guilt and the pain of remorse that he was dealing with, what did he do? He said, oh, I don't want Uriah to be in the picture, so let's let him come back. And then he actually sent him back onto the battlefield with a plan in mind. Just everybody draw back and let's let him be killed. So not only does he have an affair with Uriah's wife, Bathsheba, he has Uriah killed. I mean, say it how you want to. That's what happened. And then the baby that was born out of that relationship dies. And then later on in David's life, he has two sons and a daughter. One of the sons rapes the daughter. The other son kills that one who raped the daughter. A couple chapters later in 2 Samuel, we read that other son is murdered. So David's gone through the death of an infant, the guilt and the remorse and the pain and the heartache of sinning before God, broken relationship with God, remorse, guilt, pain, heartache. And yeah, grief. Because his baby died. And then his three kids, two of his three kids. There's grief and pain and heartache going on in David's life. David is devastated. He's beaten down. He's at wit's end. And he's wondering if anything could happen that would be worse than that. And then if you look in the New Testament and you think about, well, who in the New Testament would dealt with grief, dealt with pain, dealt with heartache, dealt with that remorse and guilt? And I thought about Peter. I mean, think about Peter. Peter's life was this swing back and forth in a moment's time. Peter got out of the boat 1 minute, And the next minute he sinks in the sea. Peter says to Jesus, "You're the Christ, you're the Son of the living God." And in the next minute, Jesus looks at him and says, "Get behind me, Satan." Peter says to Jesus, "Listen, Jesus, if everybody around you deserts you, everybody deserts you, it's okay, I'll stay with you." And what's he do? Three times. He denies him. Three times. Can you imagine the guilt, the pain, the grief? From a broken relationship. When grief happens, life, it's crazy. There's disbelief and there's shock and there's denial. There's deep sorrow, remorse, guilt, anger over stuff and at people for no reason at all. You just find yourself flying off the handle. And the only thing you say is grief is real. David had no certainty. David had no certainty that God would bring about restoration in his life. Peter had no idea that Jesus would even let him come back to be a part of his inner circle. He didn't know. I mean, Jesus was dead. How was he, you know what? Really? For you and for me, when we deal with grief, when we deal with heartache, when we deal with pain, we're looking at it from in the moment. And it's hard to know that we're going to be able to get from that top and swing all the way around that continuum without it looking like a crazy mixed up mess. That we're from one place to the next, to the next, to the next, back and forth. How do we do that? But here's the good news. The good news for David. The good news for you and for me. Listen, I've been saying all that stuff. That's all, wow, that's hard stuff to deal with, right? Here's the good news. The good news for David, the good news for us is that God was up to something. God was up to something. God was doing what only God could do. And that was to bring about restoration. The good news for you and for me is that David experienced restoration. And he was able to articulate that and write it down into what we know today as Psalm 23. God, listen, God is still up to something. Today. No matter where you find yourself on that grief continuum. No matter where your heartache is. No matter where your life is in this moment. God is up to something. God is in the restoration business. God does the same for you and for me today as He did for David thousands of years ago. If you haven't already, grab that bulletin back up, turn your Bible, open them up back up to Psalm 23. Where that word restore appears, I don't know, underline it 14 times, circle it, highlight it, do something with it, but listen, that word restored, that means, listen, here's what it means. The word restored. God restores a relationship with you and me. When we're broken, when we're in grief, when our heart aches, God restores. And here's what it means. God puts things back into place again. That's pretty cool. God puts things back into place again. It means that God brings you and me back from the brink of destruction. It means that when we are weary, when we are sad, when we are overcome, when we are overwhelmed, when we are anxious, when there's something else going on in our lives, God gives life back to us again. That's what restored means. And that's what God wants to do in your life and in mine. God does it. God knows the way. God is the way. And then in John 21, that's the whole picture and story of Peter's restoration. Peter's renewal. If you have a chance, just write that down. John 21. Go back and read it sometime to remember that. If I was telling myself to remember it, I'd never remember it. But I'm telling you to remember it, so remember it. John 21, go back and read it today. Read that whole story of Peter and that interaction with Jesus. Amazing story. But Peter had messed up so badly. Life had taken this turn south. He was experiencing what was a mere shadow of what life was like when he was with Jesus for those 3 years. And Jesus asks him one simple question. This led to renewal. This led to restoration. Listen to this. Here's what he says. Peter, do you love me? Wow. Peter, do you love me? Jesus asks us that same question today. In the midst of our grief, in the midst of our heartache, in the midst of the whatever, guilt, remorse, anger, whatever it might be, wherever you are on that continuum, the question that Jesus asks you and me today is, do you love me? He looks me dead in the eye and he says, Mike, do you love me? Put your name in that. Put your name in there. James, do you love me? That's what Jesus is asking you. Allison, do you love me? And that's for all of us. No matter where we find ourselves today in that whole grief thing. Do you love me? And what he's really saying to Peter is this. Peter, you can't stay where you are. That's what he's saying. And that's what I've heard over and over and over this year, this week, as I've thought about this, as I've prepared for this, as I've thought about this Sunday, as I've thought about where we are in grief as a church. Church, we can't stay where we are. We've got to keep moving. There's more to be done. There are lost people who live around us. There are people groping through life in the dark. There are people who need a friend. There are people who need someone just to hold on to them. And Jesus told Peter, keep going. 3 times he said it. Peter, there's work to be done. Don't stay where you are. Grieve. It's part of life. It happens, but don't stay there. Keep going. He says, feed my sheep. He says, tend the flock. He says, feed my lambs. And that same charge is for you and me today. You know, in Isaiah 40, when you read that passage in Isaiah 40, you know, it says to wait upon the Lord. Trust in Him. Wait upon Him. Hope in Him. And I thought to myself this week, I thought, man, you know what? Isaiah didn't know who he's talking to. I mean, he's talking to people in 2017. We don't wait on anything. We have instant everything. Seriously. How many of you have a Keurig at home? Because you can't wait on coffee to brew. Okay, sorry. Didn't mean to go there, meddle. How many of you have a microwave? Oh, sorry, that's another meddling question. Do you know what the average wait time is for people to see a web page come up on their computer? You know? The average wait time in 2016, you know what it was? Well, let me just back up. Let me say this. In 2001, 16 years ago, the average wait time was 8 seconds. We're not a very patient people. Well, listen to this. In 2016, the average wait time on a person who's going to wait on a web page to show up, 2 seconds. I don't know if I can move my fingers that fast. 2 seconds. Are you kidding me? We're not very patient. And then God says to us, wait. Wait on me. And I'll renew you. Trust in me. Hope in me. I'll bring renewal into your life. You're saying, and so if you, wow. Verse 31, it talks about, you know, being restored. Renewed. Refreshed. You say, well, how does that happen? I mean, come on, really? Come on, Mike. How do we do that? And I'm going to tell you what works for me. I think it'll work for you. It's what Isaiah says. Trust Him. Trust Him that in the midst of life, He's got the best plan. Listen, 40 years ago, no, more than that. Yeah, 40 years ago. I've told you this before, but you know, Diana and I said, all right, if we're gonna do this thing called marriage and do this thing called life together, what verse? I mean, what verses are going to be the guide for us? And both of us separately came together with the same verse. Verse says, Proverbs chapter 3, verses 5 and 6. You know what that says? And this is how I live life. And this is how I get past all this stuff. Sometimes I'm not as good at it as I want to be. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. That's a tough one. Because we see things through this little narrow lens, don't we? We see things that's right there. God, what are you doing? Are you kidding me? Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him. In all your ways. Even when I don't understand Him. Even when I don't understand what's going on around me. In all your ways, acknowledge Him. And I love this next part. And He will direct your steps. I'll take that. I'll take that, church. You see, God never promised that we would not have hard times. I know that's a shock to some of you, but God never promised we wouldn't have hard times. God never promised that we'd sail through life and never grieve. That we'd sail through life and never have troubles or things that we don't understand. But here's what God did promise. God did promise that He would never leave us and He would never forsake us. And God did promise that He would be our refuge and our strength and a very present help in the time of trouble. Thanks be to God. Thanks be to God.